shadows of the government halls lies the truth. A truth waiting for a voice. The KCOR Digital Radio Network proudly presents to you that voice. And now, broadcasting to you at the speed of light, from her mobile command unit somewhere on the celestial highway, the host of hyperspace, Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris Blue Raven.
Wanna take a ride? Take a ride.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Hyperspace on KCOR Digital Radio Network, live out of Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm your host, Solaris Blue Raven. Hope everybody's enjoying Fantopia Friday with Youthful Classified with Erica Lukes, The Paradigm Matrix with William Miranda, and Military X-Files with Matt Maloney. And you can listen live to the show on your phone, calling in at 605-475-1680. You can sign into the chat room at kcorradio.com and participate with the show in chat, or you can call in with a question on Skype at KCOR Radio or call in and ask a question at 702-425-9230. And you can text your questions or comments at hashtag KCOR on Twitter. And you can follow me on Twitter under Solaris Blue Ribbon if you are so inclined to do so. My recent book, 1 Million Miles Till Midnight, is now live and available on Amazon.com and Kindle. So pick up your copy today. It's published under Night Vision Press. And my DVD documentary, I3 Remote Disclosure and Covert Technology, is also available for purchase. You can access this information on my hyperspace page here at KCOR for the links to purchase a copy. And a shout out to Dark Matter Digital Network. You can catch the replay of Hyperspace on Thursday evenings at their network. You can also catch the archives for free here at KCOR Digital Radio Network in the archives section. And if you wish to support the station at KCOR, just click the donate button to show your support for the station and hosts. And you can also donate to a show of your choosing here at KCOR, which you can specify. And we certainly thank you for supporting this awesome network. And don't forget, you can catch the replay for Hyperspace at Paranormal UK Radio Network each Friday night from 8 p.m. till 10 p.m. And that's Greenwich Mean Time. And also, I will be doing a presentation at the UFO Watchtower events. So if you're interested, that will be July 27th through the 29th. So just go ahead and access UFO Watchtower events online and go ahead and sign up and go over there and come see us. And I have a wonderful guest for you all this evening. This is my, I guess we can call him a permanent regular guest. And my wonderful guest tonight is Mark Snyder. And Mark is a senior programmer analyst at a Fortune 500 company in Columbus, Ohio. He has a BFA from Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, and a BBA from the University of Cincinnati. Mark also was a competitive bodybuilder for years and won the following titles: winner of light heavy class in Mr. Midwest in 1989 and overall winner of Mr. Glass City in 1989. He performs as a solo fingerstyle guitarist at many venues in Central Ohio. Mark has recorded the following two CDs of guitar music: Living Water and Songs in the Night. And Mark is an expert researcher in the Billy Meyer Contact Reports, which he expands on his radio show, Ohio Exopolitics. Mark has also had his own UFO experiences as well. And you can access his website at www.exopoliticsohio.us. And please welcome Mark to the show this evening. Good evening, Mark.
Solaris, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. You sound like you got a lot of energy.
Oh, great. It must be the caffeine in my blood. All right.
The people hearing this will not have heard the conversation before the conversation.
That's
which
right.
Is quite that's interesting.
That's classified. No doubt. So what's been going on in your orbit?
Oh, you know, just trying to hang in there, I guess. Nothing super amazing. It's a lot of work at the day job and a little bit of music on the side. And I can't stop studying this Meyer information. Sometimes I think it just takes me over, and I just literally can't stop. I don't know. It's interesting trying to figure out what motivates you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, maybe it's just the philosophical aspects of the material itself.
It could be. It could mm-hmm. be. And it sounds like you've got this, presentation at the UFO Watchtower coming up?
I do. In July.
Are you excited about that?
Oh, it'll be fun. I think we're going to have a good time. Yeah. It'll be kind of interesting.
Very, very good. You know, I have I'm a human fire hose of information, so you can point me in a specific direction or I can just roll with it. It's up to
you. Okay. I have plenty of topics to cover. And also, I do want to make sure we mention you are resurrected on revolution.radio now. You have your show back live over there?
4 to 6 on Saturdays, 4 to 6
okay.
p.m.
Eastern. So if people want to, yeah. Great. And you're still doing your own.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's a lot, I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, you know, back into that mode of extra time and energy, but still, it pays off. You have some interesting guests, and of course, your information's awesome. I did want to mention, we kind of covered a few topics off air prior to, you know, kind of did a rundown. What about reincarnation? You want to start with that tonight?
Sure, that would be a great place to start. The Meyer information is really completely thorough, very thorough on reincarnation. One thing it teaches is that we have something called a spirit form. And the spirit form resides in the center of our middle brain in an area called the superior colliculus. And that's the area that integrates our sight, our hearing, our sense of smell, our sense of taste. And you have a little bit like a spark of energy, let's call it that. It resides in this area of our brain. And the German, Billy's books are in German, they describe this as a Talstock in the German, which is said to be a fragment of the universal consciousness. Our universe has an intelligence behind it. And mostly in the Meyer information, they just refer to it as the creation. So we have this fragment of the creation within us, and it never dies. It can never be harmed by anything in the material world. It comes into the body of the child at 21 days old. So, I don't know, it's maybe more of a zygote at that time. And the spirit form comes in, and it brings with it the consciousness of the child. So we have two consciousnesses. We have a spiritual consciousness and a material consciousness. And who you are in this life is the material consciousness. The spiritual consciousness has all of the accumulated knowledge from all your previous lifetimes. So one question you might ask is, how old is the spirit form that you have in your body, in your middle brain? And I was just looking over an interesting contact report. Now, this is contact report 248, and Billy is talking with a man named Pata at this point. Pata is the leader. He was the person who was the captain of the mothership. And Billy rode on the mothership back in 1975 when he was having contacts with Semyase. So this is a contact report, and it talks about humans and pre-humans. And I'll start here with Pata speaking. He says, Pata says, I can give you very precise information about that because according to our research, there were health illnesses and diseases on the Earth approximately 4.5 million years ago. And Billy asked, there were already Earth-created humans? And Pata says, there were only early forms of humans, upright, walking, hominid, tree dwellers, and ground inhabitants. But, and Billy asks, but still clearly human forms. And Pata says, certainly, but these beings were not yet filled with reason and understanding in the way that the actual first human was, who even disposed of cognitive reason and a recognizable consciousness. So I was talking about reincarnation, and the planet that you live on, if it's the right kind of planet and it's located in the right place, it will evolve. Plants and animals and primates will eventually evolve. And about 4.5 million years ago, human-like, upright walking, tree dwellers, and ground inhabitants started to appear on the Earth. Now, I haven't tracked down exactly. I thought it was 4.5 million years ago when the first humans were here with the first spirit forms. But he says here that the one namely developed authoritative and human-forming reason more than 3.7 million years ago. So let's just roughly say 3 to 4 million years ago humans started to appear on the earth, and they have a special kind of spirit form that allows them to evolve their consciousness. And the reason that the universal consciousness created human beings was in order to help it with its own evolution. So that's, we're like boots on the ground for this super consciousness. So what happens is, and I'll go over this again quickly, the spirit form comes into the body of the child and it brings the new consciousness. Now, the new material consciousness of the child doesn't typically know anything about any of its previous lives. It can't walk, it can't talk, it can't do anything. But programmed into the subconscious is all of the what they call evolutive values from the previous lifetimes. And that would be like your sense of logic, your sense of discernment, your wisdom, your sense of humor, your confidence, your optimism, your sense of satisfaction. All these evolutive values are stored in your subconsciousness. Now, what's really interesting about the subconscious is, and this kind of steps out of the Meyer material, and this kind of goes toward more towards Dr. Bruce Lipton and what he's teaching right now. But the first 7 years of our life, our subconsciousness is like in record mode, and it's recording the behavior of our father, of our mother, of our aunts and our uncles, our older brothers and our teachers, and it's storing these like little music downloads or something in our subconscious. And that's how we learn. But the subconscious really is more like a tape recorder. It's just recording all this information that it sees the first 7 years. And then in the seventh year, or right around the sixth year, roughly, we start to become truly conscious and have our own kinds of thoughts. And the consciousness, the true consciousness, as opposed to the subconscious, is creative. And it has a sense of time. And it has a lot of things that the subconscious doesn't. Your subconscious is filled with, like, all of these stored behaviors. And the problem that we go through in life is a lot of times we're just playing these automatic behaviors. For example, when you're driving down the road, you may have a subconscious program that will play because you've driven this particular route many, many times before. And you can be talking to your friend while you're driving down the road. Your conscious mind is engaged in this conversation you're having with your friend, where the unconscious mind is driving the car, which is a little scary, but not that scary because the subconscious is incredibly fast and it can store a ton of information.
Right. It's like the ghost record. It's almost like going in autopilot.
Exactly. And I've done that before. You've probably done it before.
When
you come out of autopilot, you're like, oh my goodness.
Isn't it interesting? Doesn't it kind of cue you to, insofar as who's really running the show? Who's really running the body on the bioelectric level? What I call the bio unit, you know, and it enters onto a timeline with a database and a series of programs, for example. Mm-hmm. So what my question would be, first of all, who creates these programs? Is it really source or is it us from another timeline? And how does it all filter in? You know, I have to look at it. It reminds me of alien technology.
The subconscious is just like a tape recorder. It's just like an iPod or something. It's doing nothing but recording.
Yeah.
And there's really nobody in the subconscious. It's just all these pre-recorded things. So what happens, for example, you can have some experience. Say someone is rude to you. You're unfairly treated or whatever. And your conscious mind doesn't want to react. You just want to go on with your life. You want to forget about it. You want to move on. But your subconscious has this program that it's learned. And it kind of rotates and continues this, these negative thoughts. And the negative thoughts that rotate, and you might say negative things, and before you realize it, you said things you wish you didn't even say, and you cause more conflict in your life. So this is a stored program in your subconscious. And you're absolutely right. The subconscious takes over. And so part of the spiritual teaching in the Meyer information is trying to reprogram the subconscious to eliminate all these negative programs, and also to educate the conscious mind to really be able to analyze your thinking, to be able to detect when you have one of these subconscious programs playing. Because when these negative thoughts start to appear and rotate, you're weakening your own life force.
Right. Yep.
Have you ever felt that before?
Well, I've been through a lot of different programs, so yeah, I can identify with a lot of that. And also the idea of this, I love the Billy Meyer contact report simply because it is a timeless advice. It's just like there's a timelessness to it because it's you can apply it to everyday living in any lifetime on any timeline. And I think that's what you were talking about, you know, reprogramming the subconscious to educate the conscious mind. I think that's huge. And that's what society is based on, mind control, I mean, indoctrination and false programming. So they have to literally re-educate themselves and clear that whole slate and then start re-identifying and reprogramming on a celestial level, in my opinion.
Well, it's very interesting what you were, when you were saying that, it made me think. I had to let me step back a little bit, because what we're talking about is some of the specific spiritual teaching in the Meyer case. Mm-hmm. You know, most contactees, and this is, I mean, I started, 10 years ago, I guess, doing the radio shows, and I was really focusing on the contactees. And I guess my original URL was part of this thing that Stephen Bassett had set up, you know, and he was all gung-ho for disclosure and all this, and I was going to be the Ohio section of this disclosure thing.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
he wanted each state to have an exopolitical website, and even the big cities to have their own. Mm-hmm. It didn't quite pan out that way, but what was really interesting as I interviewed these people, some I felt were credible, some were not as credible. It just depended. But the thing that I found out was, overall, I would say all of them, except the Meyer case, were just a incidental contact that occurred here and there, maybe one or two or three times in their life. And that was it. Mm-hmm. Other than maybe Charles Hall, who wrote the three books on millennial hospitality, who says he interacted with these tall whites, you know, in the southwestern United States near Groom Lake and Nellis Air Force Base and all that. Mm-hmm. But the tall whites were not giving him any information on purpose. In other words, they were very secretive. Mm-hmm. And they did not communicate with him intentionally to give him information. Now, when I came across the Meyer case, the big difference was, here was somebody who was having extended contacts. For example, the first contact with Spoth was 11 years. That was a series of contacts. His second contact person asked it, contacts for another 11 years. Then he went 11 years where he had no contacts. He lived pretty much a normal life. And then he had contacts with Semyase for about 4 years. And then she had her accident. It had to be cut short. And the rest of his life, he's had these, his main two contacts were this Ptah guy who was just reading from and the other guy named Quetzal. So he's had like 75 years of contacts. And so we have a big body of information now. And if you look at it from even the bigger picture, his spirit form, see, the extraterrestrials didn't want to land UFOs on the White House lawn, or didn't want to land UFOs on the Kremlin, or land UFOs in London, because they knew that that would cause too much trauma to our society. So they took a different approach where they had a child be born every so much time, every 1,000 years or so, every 100 years or so, with this very ancient spirit form. which can give us all the information we're talking about. I think we're getting close on our first break, so I better I better reel myself in here a little bit.
Okay.
But so that's the Meyer case, and maybe after the break we can I'll try to elaborate on that, and I'm sure
you have a few questions. And I did have a few questions. You know, with Charles Hall, you mentioned that they were more discreet, or maybe they didn't want him really knowing what's really going on with the Tall Whites and the Illusion of. How did he find out about them then? Was he able to pierce the veil? Or
He came across them accidentally in the desert when he was working at Nellis Air Force Base. And at that time, he was releasing weather balloons for the airport there. Mm-hmm. And they actually had a base on the side of a mountain there. And the colonels and stuff would come out there and interact with these Tall Whites, and they weren't even the colonels and generals weren't allowed even to look at their technology. They had to turn around and look away when the ship was in a certain area. So that it was really interesting. It's a really interesting case, but
it's very interesting. You know, it just makes me wonder about the. I know people have their version of the origins of the Tall Whites. It just tells me that something else is going on besides the. It's almost like they were engineered here by our. I don't want to say it was by the Third or Fourth Reich, but there's something way different. Something's really off with that to me. I don't know. Maybe we can dive into it.
Okay, sure. Well, yeah, I mean, after the break, we can talk about some of that. But what I'm saying is, with the Meyer case, I think the disclosure is coming through the Meyer case. Is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, it's not coming through our government. It's not coming through the media. It's not coming through the appointed channels either. What they've done is a much more subtle thing where they have this very ancient spirit form incarnate on our earth as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad, now Edward Albert Meyer. These were the seven spiritual teachers. But this same spirit form has also incarnated as Socrates, Aristotle, Galileo, Mendelssohn, Mozart. So all these individuals were here to help raise our consciousness from the inside, you see, as members of our own society, mm-hmm. rather than an outside force which would shock people and cause all kinds of trauma.
Right. Well, what you're saying also is that we are those species, too. It's all of us. It's all the beings here who have incarnated here on the timeline who carry the celestial database. And so, you know, when we activate through frequency and consciousness, we're actually able to bring forth that type of illumination to the masses. So I think it's everybody who's a star being who enters onto the timeline. That's just my impression there. But we can get into this more when we go to the break here, everybody. We're going to head for a break. And this is Hyperspace at KCOR Digital Radio Network, live out of Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm your host, Solaris Lear, and my wonderful guest tonight is Mark Snyder. And we will be right back, so stay tuned.
You're listening to Hyperspace, hosted by your mistress of the night, Solaris Blue Raven.
Solaris Blue Raven.
A vision that tells us that we belong to something that is greater than ourselves, that we are not, that none of us are alone.
Share the truth and be part of the movement by calling the KCOR hotline number at 702-425-9230. That's 702-425-9230.
Give us a call now.
Worldwide callers use Skype name KCOR Radio. More with Solaris Blue Raven on the KCOR Digital Radio Network.
After this, after this, after this, after this, after this, after this.
Hyperspace. Hyperspace. Beaming to you the truth at the speed of light. To be on with Solaris, call 702-425-9230. That's 702-425-9230. Worldwide callers, use Skype name KCOR Radio. Magnify the experience by sharing your thoughts worldwide on Twitter using hashtag KCOR. Or converse with other whistleblowers and truth seekers in the live chat at KCORradio.com.
Well, that's your choice.
And now, the voice of hyperspace, your host,
Solaris Blue Raven.
Welcome back, everybody, to Hyperspace here at KCOR Digital Radio Network, live out of Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm your host, Solaris Blue Raven. My wonderful guest tonight is Mark Snyder. And Mark, you know, before we hit the break there, we were discussing a little bit about the disclosure. And to me, is, you're right. It's really, and also, not only is it the Billy Meier materials and the contact reports, but the contactees, your experiencers, all these people that have had a one-on-one interface with a type of an exotic technology or an extraterrestrial type being. I mean, all of these people who have come forward over the years, I think that that means more than anything.
Well, the one thing that hit me as a person who's been interviewing these people over the years, the past 10 years, I really found that the most people had very isolated incidents, you know, that maybe like I always enjoyed Miriam Delicato's case, and but it was like just a couple contacts in Canada. You know, there's a few isolated things. Travis Walton was one experience.
Right.
You know, the difference in the Meyer case is that we have a guy that's had 75 years of contact information. And his 51 books, he's written 51 books.
Wow.
Are designed to help our society evolve. See, right now we're, as it says in the book Might of Thoughts, we're ill in our consciousness. And Semyase told Billy that we were, we're on the path of self-destruction, and only a complete change in our consciousness could save us. So this teaching, these 51 books and the 2,000 contact reports are designed over the next, supposedly it'll take 8 centuries for us to evolve into a healthy society. Now right now what we're facing is an extinction event again. Now prior to our age, the last great disaster occurred 12,500 years ago when a asteroid was steered intentionally by the Lemurians into our atmosphere, where it almost completely destroyed the planet. Now, the past 6,000 years, I guess, or so, we have been pulling ourselves out of the rubble, and we're finally now a fairly evolved society, but we're not living according to these creational natural laws. And this is one of the goals of this teaching, is to help us to learn these creational natural laws. If you live according to these laws, you'll have prosperity, but unfortunately we're not living according to these laws. So,
right, it's like universal law. If you're living in alignment with the multiverse, then everything flows accordingly. Well, what it is too, in my opinion, is it's the technology has been advancing, of course, but the evolution in consciousness hasn't, is what you're really saying. And I believe that's the case also. And it's, that's big. You know, if they can't keep up with consciousness and they have all the technology, what good is it?
Right. It's a big problem. So that's what the, so anyway, my perspective has changed over the years. I started out with the radio show, you know, kind of trying to get the word out overall. And then I realized, oh, 99.9% of the contacts are kind of incidental. You know, an hour here, an hour there. Some people had one or two or three contacts. There were, in Europe, there was something a little bigger called the Friendship case, where there was more mass contacts. But we were never given information. We were never given, you know, information about the universe or how we should live or anything like that. So, and then I started to see the corruption of our government and the blatant corruption. And we've gotten all the information about the pedophilia now and all of the other horrific things. And we found out also a lot of our wars, we were given false information about the reason that we got into these wars. So there's now a complete, you know, we're complete, at least in my case, I've completely evaluated. I'm taking a different perspective. I don't expect truth to come from our government.
Agreed.
You know, I think it's coming behind the scenes.
Right. And those of us who are actually shining the light in those areas of corruption as well. And of course, the truth media has been doing that. You know, the mainstream has been covering it up and creating propaganda. But those of us in the truth media, and there is a difference between the truth media and the alternative media. The alternative is just what it is, what it is. But those of us who actually do the work, roll up our sleeves, decode, and really start shining the light on things. Yeah, that changes the whole dynamic, and they have no place to run. So I think that the rifting effect has a lot to do with where we've been as on the radio, interviewing people and putting the truth out there as best we can. It really does make an effect.
I'm kind of interested to see what's going to happen over the next few years, because there's a real war going on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a supernatural war, consciousness war, technological war, a political war, religious war, you name it, it's there. And what I wanted to ask you, have you been monitoring any of the activity going on with the Big Island and the volcanic activity? Because to me, I was wondering if that correlates to any of the contact reports with Billy Meyer.
I have not. I have a whole section on my website that's dedicated to disasters that occurred from 2011 into 2016. It's also about overpopulation, and I followed very closely the hurricanes and the fires. Now, I don't know what the Meyer case says specifically about Hawaii. Is this a natural occurrence? Is this, right. I mean, is this just Hawaii expanding?
You know, I think another island's forming, to be honest, but I also think that it has a lot to do with energy, consciousness, and forces beyond this world. I do. I think that has a supernatural kind of signature to it. Even though it appears just, okay, yes, we know that volcanic activity happens and the Big Island's notorious for that. It just seems to me that something else is happening here. And I think that it's correlating with some of the things associated with maybe Mars and some other, you know, assessments that people have been making over the years with the 19.5 degrees. And I just get the sense that more I look into it, I feel like there's a correlation. That's all.
Is Hawaii at 19.5?
The Big Island has a correlation with what I, from what I understand, with Mars, and also, there was another area as well, some of the sacred sites. So there's definitely something going on in the vibrational shift associated with that.
Well, maybe I need to spend some time on that.
Well, I'll send you some links. You know, I've been doing a little bit of digging, not a whole lot, but to me, it just seems like there's something else happening behind the scenes. And knowing how that island is in its own intelligence, insofar as, you know, you can look at the Hawaiian Islands as kind of like the ancient Lemurian healing energies and the ancient Lemuria and a remnant of, a lot of people have said that. And I do resonate with that. I do believe that that's the case. So with that comes ancient celestial heritage, knowledge, information, and a lot of other things, you know, so.
Yeah, it's difficult, because what happens is, I think, and this is a normal progression, people, and I was talking about this to my guest Rem last night, Rem Robinson. He's an artist, and he's really into the Meyer case. I mean, he's very knowledgeable, and we had a very interesting discussion on Revolution Radio. He's from Colorado.
Interesting. Very, very interesting.
Not far from you, probably, I'm guessing. I don't know. And there's a study group in Colorado that's studying the Meyer material. So what we have the official groups, which are called FIGU. Then there's one in Canada. There's one in Australia. There's one in Austria, I believe. There used to be, I think, one in Japan. The one in the United States was disbanded, but we have a lot of unofficial groups that have popped up in the United States. I think there's one in Ohio. I've never even gone to meet him. I've wanted to. I've never done it. There's another group in Arizona. I did go down and meet with them a couple times. There's another group in New Mexico. The group in Colorado, man, they're really, I resonate a lot with them. They're very knowledgeable, and they're also willing to talk about it.
Nice. What part of Colorado are they in?
I don't think they're that far from Boulder. I'd have to.
Really? Interesting.
You're
okay.
Boulder, right? You're.
Yeah, I don't give my location on. Yeah, but you know.
Okay. I won't say your address. I don't even know your address.
No, that's. Yeah.
But so yeah, it's really. But there's a natural perspective change. Mm-hmm. So you're interested in the big picture in the universe. And reincarnation and things like that. And there's this whole area of, I hate to call it self-help, but I don't know what else to call it, which we go into in The Might of Thoughts and the book The Psyche and The Way to Live, which are three of his books. And as you know, his books are all written in German.
Right. And you're studying German, though, right?
Well, it happens naturally. I think it's just part of the evolution that goes on. For example, there's something that Billy talks about. It's called the Lebenskraft or the life force. I might have touched on that just at the beginning of the show. And he explains, he puts it this way. He says, therefore, it is necessary to search for the source of the life power and to develop the power in order to have a reliable life potential on which you can trust. So let me try to break down a little bit of this. And this is the kind of studying that I'm doing most of the time on my own. Mm-hmm. When I study the material, I'm not so much in the contact reports the way I used to be. I'm more studying this kind of material, which is something you can apply to your daily life. So let me talk about the life power a little bit, or the Lebenskraft. And I will pull in something from Contact Report 39 for this. Now, this was a discussion that Billy had with Pata on Wednesday, December 3rd, 1975, at 1:37 a.m. And Billy is talking to Pata, and Billy says, then the case is indeed clear. There's something else, however, that you should explain for everyone for the interest of our cause, namely the connections of certain connections with the age of the Earth human being. And I already know about these things because Svath informed me about them when I was a boy. Nevertheless, these things were never written down, so others aren't oriented about them. I'm referring to the fact that mental forces of every single human being are capable of raising or lowering the life force of others. Now, the important thing to remember here is that associating with the wrong group of people can lower your life force. Now think about the significance of that. Mm-hmm. Now there's also a book called The OM that maybe we'll talk about later if we have enough time. Omphala Murado. It talks about the creational life power. And you may have heard Billy wrote an article, it's called Peace on Earth, and he talks about our peace symbol with the lines that go downward. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Right, yeah.
Well, Billy calls this the false peace symbol. And he says it may negatively affect the life force. He says the turnaround tree of life does not let the force of life become effective, but lets the force flow into the ground. In that way, life's counterpart is changed to become the annihilator of life. So these symbols, like the false peace symbol, are affecting us across all of the earth in a subconscious way that actually is weakening our life force. Now, this is, excuse me, just a couple other things I wanted to throw out that I found interesting, a little off topic. This is Contact Report 216, that the light, when it comes in from the sun, we get life force from that, but there are something called deeply penetrating light vibrations that can go down into the earth, and they go literally, they help the vitality of the underground plants and animals. Mm-hmm. So these even the fish in the deep dark sea are affected, their life force is enhanced by these deeply penetrating light vibrations.
Yeah, that sounds like photons.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. So our spirit form, particularly our consciousness working with our spirit form, is where the inner life power comes from. And so we should nurture our thoughts in such a way that it enhances our life potential, our life power, because our thoughts have incredible power. So, for example, good thoughts produce good feelings. And Billy explains that the feelings grow out of the thoughts. And he explains that an emotion is different than a feeling. And it will be much in our future before we can really even recognize all of our feelings. But the feelings grow out of the thoughts. And the feelings, if you're having good, neutral, positive thoughts, you'll have good feelings. And the feelings are very important because the feelings themselves can also spawn more thoughts. So the goal here is to think in a neutral, positive way. So what is neutral positive? You can say, I'm confident, and that's a neutral, positive thing to be. But if you become overconfident, if you become an egomaniac, well, that's not neutral positive. If you're confident, that will bring good things into your life. If you're a megalomaniac or an egomaniac, you'll bring negative things into your life. So you can get out of balance by thinking too positive. And a lot of the positive thinkers that have come through time have actually committed suicide because of this. Yes, so the goal is to maintain a balance. And the way Billy explains it is the negative and the positive are two forces that belong together and shouldn't be separated because they belong together. So if you have something negative in your life that you're dealing with right now, recognize that you cannot typically completely just try all at once to push that out. It's there to help you manage your thoughts, to help you grow in some way. Whenever you're making progress, something's going to come up in the way to slow you down. It's another one of these creational natural laws.
Yeah, it's called sabotage. Well, the way I look at it, I had to be like that, sorry. But no, I look at it as transmutational. You know, if you have something like that in your life that's an obstacle, alchemically speaking, I think that would be the solution, alchemy, period, you know, transmutation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. In other words, if you try to get rid of the negative, you can go into the state of what the German calls Erschöpfung, mm-hmm. which is out of control of the good human nature. And we have a good human nature. And that human nature has to be neutral, positive balance. So that's what we're trying to do. This is one of the rules, the laws of nature, is to first start with our thinking and to learn as much as possible to remain in this neutral positive state. Now, a person that's neutral positive can be confident, optimistic, relaxed, cheerful, enthusiastic, but he isn't blind to the negative. He recognizes that, you know, we're destroying the biosphere. He can see the animals that are killed on the roads. He knows about the child abuse. But he doesn't let his thoughts rotate with these negative topics. Mm-hmm. So we have to steer our thinking, just like a captain steers his ship. And this is one of the analogies. He says, you are the master of your own destiny. You are the forger of your own fortune. You create your own good luck by good thoughts, good feelings, good habits, and these all bring good circumstances into your life. So this is, you know, you start out in this exopolitics, talking about UFOs and ancient history wars in the past, and we can still talk about this stuff, but whether I like it or not, this is where my focus is headed. And part of me goes kicking and screaming into this because it wasn't really my original intention.
Wow. Well, you're so good at it, though. You're very, very good at decoding the data with the Billy Meyer material and everything. Yeah. Yeah. To me, it is. It is definitely a transmutational thing. Life is one big frequency. You know, you just have to learn how to navigate it. And I think the key to that is through consciousness. So
one of the things that I found was studying his material. Like, I have four books, The Goblet of Truth, The Psyche, The Way to Live, mm-hmm. and The Might of Thoughts. And I don't know how many times at this point that I've read The Might of Thoughts, 6, 7, 8 times. I don't know. But instead of, you know, reading 20, 30, 40 pages in a sitting, it went down. I'm reading 10, 5, one page, focusing on one paragraph. And then actually really, really thinking about what that paragraph is telling me. So it's just a completely different perspective. Like, now that I've explained this to you, can you see why I'm not really concerned about the government disclosure too much?
Right, exactly. Well, like I said before, and we are the disclosure. There's nothing that they have that we don't have access to, quite honestly.
Right.
When you look at your cellular memory, celestial heritage, and everything you can dive into through consciousness, we already have the answers to the equation. We really don't need them. But the problem that I'm running into is that they're halting the evolution of the beings here by lying and deceiving and controlling and manipulating with the reverse engineer technologies. That's why I've always been on the front lines of disclosing this, because it's been against universal law for what they've been doing. It's not about supporting and protecting or shielding this world or our countries. It's about control.
I don't know if you've ever had a chance to listen to any of the Joe Rogan podcasts, particularly when he talks with Eddie Bravo.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had a chance to listen?
I've heard of him. I haven't really checked him out too much.
Maybe after the break, we can talk a little bit about that, because it's so interesting hearing this back and forth, because mm-hmm. at least in my opinion, I think Joe is still a guy that's in the box, so to speak. And
right.
Eddie Bravo is a very independent thinker,
very
which I really think is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need more of those for sure. There's no doubt about that one. Yeah, we're going to have our break, everybody, so hold on there. This is Hyperspace at KCMR Digital Radio Network, live out of Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm your host, Solaris Lurivan. My wonderful guest tonight is Mark Snyder. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Stand by.
All right, in 3, 2, 1.
You've been listening to Hyperspace. 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 Hosted by Solaris Blue Raven, where the truth is beamed to you at the speed of light. Live every Friday night at 9 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on the KCOR Digital Radio Network. For more information on the host of Hyperspace, Solaris Blue Raven, please visit her website at nightshadowanomalydetectives.com. Hyperspace.
Hyperspace.
Once thought a theoretical dimensional anomaly, now a tangible cosmic waveform to the truth.
Truth.
Hyperspace.
This is KCOR Las Vegas, home of the Digital Radio Network, broadcasting from a shack just south of Area 51.
Wait, that doesn't exist.
This is the KCOR Digital Radio Network. Now for the news.
Blue Raven.
Wanna take a ride?
Take a ride.
Welcome back, everybody, to Hyperspace here at KCOR Digital Radio Network, live out of Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm your host, Solaris Blue Ribbon. My wonderful guest tonight is Mark Snyder. And Mark, it surely is a pleasure to have you on board tonight. So thank you for joining us again.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun, especially the conversation behind the conversation.
I'm telling you, yes, behind screen.
People are missing the second show.
That's right.
The other show that goes on during the breaks. It's been fascinating.
Exactly. Indeed. So where do you want to pick up the pace where we left off before the break?
Yeah, I had brought up the Joe Rogan show because Joe and Eddie Bravo have these interesting back and forths all the time where Joe Rogan is kind of he represents like the mainstream view and mainstream media more, and Eddie Bravo is like way outside the box. So they have these interesting back and forth all the time, which are very, very, I think it's where we are as a society. You know, we're having this information war where on the one hand, the mainstream media is trying to, you know, put everything back in this box that it used to be years ago. But the problem is too much has got out and they can't get it all put back. But that's what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting to see that back and forth between those two. Have you ever seen any of those programs yet?
No, I think I've seen them on YouTube. I haven't really watched them. I've seen promos for them and things like that, but no.
You should check it out sometime. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, even within the alternative movement now, we're getting some really strange, bizarre, outrageous information.
Right. Yeah. Everything's getting distorted. It's like a wormhole.
It is very
strange. I've
noticed
that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of what we've been talking about off air.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like people are running with the wrong information, or sometimes it's for
money.
Sensationalism and money. Absolutely.
Sensationalism is very, exactly. Very right. So that's kind of where we are. You know, it's strange. It's a strange world that
yes,
we
it
live.
Is. And it's getting weirder by the day. No doubt about that one.
Well, you started to ask me questions about reincarnation, and we kind of got off on a little side tangent about Earth humans. So maybe we can run into that a little bit and talk a little bit about the history of the Earth.
Well, and also I wanted to touch on Atlantis again.
Okay.
That's all right.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll steer us into Atlantis.
Okay.
So if we go back about 5 billion years ago, the Earth was starting to form into a solid mass. And there was no instant creation of human beings. You know, our religions talk about God said, you know, poof, Adam was there. Well, it didn't work that way, at least according to the Meyer information. The Earth started to evolve a Earth human about 9 to 12 million years ago. They were not Homo sapiens sapiens yet. More of a hominid. And we descended, according to Meyer information, not from apes, but from primates. And the whole primate, apes, humans developed from the line of mammals. And there was a life form on the Earth called Adelos basialis cromtoni, which was about 225 million years ago, and they say it's the common ancestor of all mammals. And this, it's like a little shrew. It's, it has a tiny skull. It's only about an inch long. It looks a little bit like a little armadillo, you could say. It was about 225 million years ago. A paleontologist named Adrian Hunt first discovered that. And that slowly evolved into mammals, which slowly evolved into primates, and humans come down from the primate line. Now, according to Meyer information, all animals, all plants, all humans have this spirit form. And the spirit form is what reincarnates. The material consciousness is unique and new every lifetime. But we bring our information from the previous life comes in through the subconscious. There, all of our evolutive values are programmed into the subconscious. And our spirit form has also absorbed all of these evolutive values, your sense of love and wisdom and confidence and optimism and all things like that from your previous lives are in there. They're in your subconscious and they're in your spirit form. Now, the material consciousness is just brand new, each in reincarnation. So what happens is your spirit form, which is a fragment of the universal consciousness, your spirit form, which never dies and never gets sick, is impulsing your material consciousness and kind of giving you little hunches on the right way to go. Now, what's different about humans is that we go through the evolution, of the consciousness, where primates, which are called sometimes, consequently, primate beings are sometimes called primary beings, they come into being, and the human species develops from the primary or primate beings, but primates, they do not develop their consciousness. They succumb to a kind of degeneration of the consciousness, so to speak. So they don't completely evolve the consciousness as human beings do. Now, the Meyer information says that in our Milky Way galaxy, there are 2.6 million advanced human civilizations. And I believe there's something like 7.5 million solar systems that could support advanced human life. But right now there's about 2.6 million human civilizations in our galaxy. Now, where this gets a little confusing or a little complicated is that there are different space-time dimensions, space-time configurations. So in our universe, which we call the Dern universe in the Meyer teachings, there are seven different space-time configurations, which you can think of as kind of different dimensions. So if you would look at a telescope and look at the Lyra Vega system, the star system, you would be looking at the star system in our space-time configuration. Now, if you had a little device, a little adjustment on your telescope where you could change your space-time configuration, you would still see a Lyra Vega system, but you would notice some variations in it. And you could adjust it again, and you could go into space-time configuration 5, and you would see still Lyra Vega system, but there are some little differences. So these extraterrestrials, most of them are coming from the older space-time configurations. So not only can they jump from star to star system, but they can jump from one space-time configuration to another. And so the people from Lyra Vega were here the first time 389,000 years ago. And at that time, there was a naturally evolving Earth human, but we really didn't have a civilization here. Now, the people from Lyra Vega that came here, some of them did not behave the way they were supposed to. They abused some of the native Earth humans, and they did some things that were not correct. And their superiors found out about it, and another group from Lyra Vega came here. And the group that violated their commandments, and part of it was having sex with Earth humans, and as well as abusing Earth humans. The people that did those things were condemned, so to speak, or judged, and they had to enter. They would stay on the Earth. They could not go back to their home. They had to become Earth humans. And in other words, they died on the Earth. Now, according to the Meyer information, and this isn't a very popular thing to say, but according to Meyer information, the planet you die on is the planet that you reincarnate on. So some of the spirit forms that we have here on Earth. Some of the people are from Lyra Vega, and they have an older spirit form. Their spirit form is about 8 to 12 million years old, where most of us are much younger than that, right around 4 or so million years. Let me read something from the book, The Psyche. I think we're getting close on time again, but mm-hmm. It says here, however, this is not true for any one human life form on Earth, and also not for any spirit form belonging to a higher sphere of Earth, because the human beings on Earth themselves, those created on the Earth, are still so young regarding their evolution. They are only beginning to change their last baby shoes, while those human beings living on Earth, who originally came from the far reaches of outer space, only have a total age of 8 to 12 million years, meaning their spirit form is 8 to 12 million years old, where our spirit form, if we're a naturally evolving Earth human, would be around 3 million to 4 million years old. So that's kind of a segue into Atlantis and Lemuria, mm-hmm. which we can talk about. Go ahead.
Exactly. I was going to ask you, has Billy ever decided to revise his contact reports over the years? Has he ever decided to change any of the terminology, or has Psyche changed at all?
This book that I'm reading from, I don't think it's changed. I'm not aware of it. Mm-hmm. But like The Might of Thoughts had a new version that came out. I have the newest version. And stuff does come out on later contact reports, because things weren't clear, you know, clearly mm-hmm. spelled out. And I've actually said things that were not correct because I was looking at the older contact reports and I found out later I had to kind of adjust. Yeah, so yeah, and later.
Very interesting. Yeah, so that's very interesting to me. So he has, you see through a different lens after so many years, perhaps, after he looks and does an analysis on it. I find that very interesting. And I wonder how many authors out there and writers and people who actually do have contact information go back and look at it and say, well, this, now I see it more clearly, now I can redefine those parameters. That's interesting.
Exactly. You see something more clearly, so you can describe it a little more in detail. Yeah. And sometimes you would draw a slightly different conclusion based on that. Mm-hmm. So let me read this quickly. It says here, therefore, the human being of Earth is not yet in a position to comprehend all nuances and forms of feeling. Remember earlier we were talking about the feelings? Mm-hmm. And so these will remain inaccessible to the human beings for a still very long time, meaning the Earth humans. When the human being of Earth will be able to do so, then he or she will have already long left the Earth and will be living somewhere on different planets, because the blue planet will not exist for as long as the human being needs for his or her evolution. So we will leave the Earth someday, and we will go to other planets to support life, and that's where we'll finish our evolution. Our reincarnational evolution is very long. We go through, and I'll have to look at the notes to give you the exact figures, but the first five stages of evolution are between somewhere between 40 and 60 million years. The fifth stage is about 30 million years. And the seventh stage is broken down into seven smaller stages, and that goes into billion years. But what happens is we lose the need for a physical body, and the spirit form eventually merges back with creation. And there are seven evolutionary steps. And you wanted to talk about Atlantis and Lemuria after the break, and I'll try to work these two concepts in together.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. But,
yeah.
And I did want to ask you real quick before we do hit the break here. The blue planet, he calls the blue planet, and that's a good terminology. Does Billy classify this information? Is it a planet in his eyes, or is it a construct? I consider this world a terraformed rock called Earth. I call it a construct. Because it's all defined by frequency and vibration. So does he ever correlate this information at all, or how does he describe it? Does he really think this is a planet?
He does look at it as a planet. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more complicated than that. There are these different space-time configurations.
Right. And, exactly.
And for example, Billy's contacts, the Plearen, live on a world called Era, which is extremely Earth-like, and the two planets are kind of connected as well. And this kind of goes back into Atlantis and Lemuria, too. It kind of, we can touch all those bases. I don't want to start on a topic.
Well, that's okay. No, that's good.
I'll go on a roll for 10 minutes and not just, you'll have to cut me off. So.
No, that's okay. Definitely. You know, when I look at this, I like the space-time configuration. I know we've talked about this before when you've been on my show. But to me, it seems like if people have the template for the space-time configuration and they know how to turn it on, so to speak, or switch it on, then they would actually be able to navigate in that particular configuration versus where they're at here on the timeline. And I'm wondering how this correlates with really timeline, timelines, consciousness, and the illusion of time travel. To me, that's a big deal. And I think that if we could pinpoint the space-time configuration, what exactly creates that? Is it a program? Is it a frequency? Is it something Billy Meyer's contact told him about?
There are seven different space-time configurations in our universe. You can think of them like a different variation. They're all, each space-time configuration contains planets and solar systems, galaxies, just, and like, for example, we know the Sirius system exists in this older space-time configuration. And this goes back again to Atlantis and Lemuria and ancient history on Earth, because humanity, there were human beings that came here from other worlds, and these other worlds were also in different space-time configurations. And at the same time, there was a naturally evolving Earth human on this planet who I believe had dark skin. And I just find that very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, yeah. I don't know that much about it. He doesn't really go into that in great detail.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting that these other worlds have people on them, and they visited. You know, the ancient solar system of the Earth had three planets that supported human life.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we could get into that. I don't know. How are we doing on time?
I don't see that we're hidden for break just yet, so I'll be informed here. I'm waiting for the cues over
I'll
here.
I'll just roll then, because...
But go ahead. I was just going to say, because everything's holographic, in my opinion, you know, we're dealing with holographic realms, holographic design work, mm-hmm. to such a level that it's almost like a hologram within a hologram when you talk about these different... the universe, the multiverse, and different aspects of where we've been as a in the illusion of a solar system. I find it interesting. So to me, it just seems like there are multi-layers of holograms overlaying each other, creating different kinds of space-time configuration setups if I were to look at it from a higher parallax view.
I would bring up the work of Dr. Bruce Lipton here, and that he describes the atom as not a particle, but like a miniature tornado.
Mm-hmm.
So if you would run into that tornado, it would be like hitting something solid, even though it's not really solid. So, and to me, that resonated with me a lot. The Meyer information doesn't go into that. Intentionally doesn't go into that information. That was part of the information. In other words, there's certain information the Plearen could give us, and certain that would be helpful for us. And there were other information that would be dangerous for us to know at this time, because our, like you were saying earlier, our spiritual evolvement is so lagging behind.
Well, I would say theirs, not ours, but nudge, wink, wink. But yeah, no, totally. And when you talk about the atom, to me, that what you're describing there with the energy is like a micro galaxy. Each atom is like a micro galaxy, a miniature galaxy, multiverse. Very fascinating. Go ahead.
Yeah, the way Semyase describes it is that there are repeating patterns in the creation. So, for example, if you looked at your circulatory system, it has a branching structure just like a tree, just like the trees and the plants. So there's repeating patterns. If you look at the atom with supposedly these little neutrons spinning around it, you see the same kind of thing in the planets and solar systems. So what we have in creation are these repeating patterns, like you were saying, which mm-hmm. is, I think, very, very interesting.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah. So there are certain aspects of the Meyer information where they say, we can't tell you anymore about this particular thing right now. Like in the case of the moon landings, they couldn't talk about any of that until more recently because of the danger it would put Billy in. Billy would have been killed if he would have brought any more about moon landings.
Very interesting.
The Talmud of Emmanuel, that whole information had to come out at a specific time. If it came out any earlier than that, Billy would have been killed. Mm-hmm. So he's had like 23 attempts on his life. So yeah, there is some other group, whether it's the elite, the global elite, or whatever, that will protect their interest.
Totally. So, yeah. There's no doubt. Will he ever travel to the United States, Billy?
No. He was asked to come to the United States, and he will not come to the United States mm-hmm. because of the danger involved. For him, from his point of view, the United States is pretty much gone.
Mm-hmm. Still,
I'm much more optimistic than that, but maybe I'm very idealistic. So he says in 2020 our government will start to break down.
Well, it will be interesting to see what happens in 2020, 2022. That whole window should be very, very interesting.
I hope he's wrong.
Well, just follow your radar, follow your internal antenna.
Right.
Because it seems to me like there's an awful lot, even though we start to ascend and we start to get ourselves out of this gravity well, it seems to me like something happens that polarizes the energy and creates more conflict. So it is very interesting. It's almost like you're trying to take off in a ship and there's too much inertia. There's too much, you know, gravity. So mm-hmm. something's got to give. Something's got to give for sure.
It's very interesting, I think, that this information is getting out. And mm-hmm. it'll be interesting to see how it affects people.
Oh, yeah.
People's point of views and their perceptions.
Well, also their processing, because if they're even able to process the data that you present to them, that's the biggest problem. They can't comprehend some of this stuff. It's over their heads, and it's not even on a subconscious level. So there are some problems with people being able to do that, and I think a lot of that has to do with the misuse of technology and iPhones and everything. But we're going to have our break. You're ready? You're listening to Hyperspace here at KCOR Digital Radio Network, live out of Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm your host, Solaris Blair. My excellent guest tonight is Mark Snyder. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Hyperspace, hosted by your mistress of the night, Solaris Blue Raven.
Solaris Blue Raven.
A vision that tells us that we belong to something that is greater than ourselves, that we are not, that none of us are alone.
Share the truth and be part of the movement by calling the KCOR hotline number at 702-425-9230. That's 702-425-9230.
Give us a call now.
Worldwide callers use Skype name KCOR Radio. More with Solaris Blue Raven on the KCOR Digital Radio Network.
After this, after this, after this, after this, after this, after this.
Hyperspace. Hyperspace. Beaming to you the truth at the speed of light. To be on with Solaris, call 702-425-9230. That's 702-425-9230. Worldwide callers, use Skype name KCOR Radio. Magnify the experience by sharing your thoughts worldwide on Twitter using hashtag KCOR. Or converse with other whistleblowers and truth seekers in the live chat at KCORradio.com.
Well, that's your choice.
And now, the voice of hyperspace, your host,
Solaris Blue Raven.
Welcome back, everybody, to Hyperspace here at KCOR Digital Radio Network, live out of Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm your host, Solaris Blue Raven. My wonderful guest tonight is Mark Snyder. And Mark, we're around the last half hour of the show. It's been going very, very quickly. And I think we're going to dive into Atlantis.
Yeah, I think we are. So let's go. I'll dive into Contact Report 9. This was the ninth meeting between Billy and Semyasa. Semyasi was Billy's third contact. And this occurred in 1975. The 70s are such an important time. Just amazing things happened in the 70s. She would land her ship in Switzerland right out in the open during the day in the beginning. And Billy would ride his moped out to the site, and he would typically lean his moped up against a tree and then sit under the tree and wait for her to come out of the ship. And they would sit down and have these tremendous discussions. And in Contact Report 9, this is the ninth contact. I wonder what the date on that is. Let me look really quickly. It probably would be right around 1975, I'm thinking. Usually Friday, March 21st, 1975 at 4:18 p.m., she lands her beam ship out on one of these rolling hills in Switzerland. And they start having this discussion. And she talks about the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. So there were extraterrestrial humans who were on the Earth thousands of years ago. In fact, if you go back 133,000 years, Atlant, who was a man of Lyrian descent, came here with his wife, Caryatide. And they were both what the Meyer material calls an Ishwish, or a king of wisdom. And that is kind of like PhD on steroids, for lack of a better term. It's also equivalent. It's where the term God came from on the Earth. And maybe we can talk about that a little bit, because the gods of the Earth were human, and they came from the depths of space. Some of them were really brutal. They were brutal, and they demanded worship, and they created religions, and they abused the earth peoples. And maybe we'll have a little bit of time to talk about that. Some of them were benevolent. Now, Atlant and his wife Caryatide were benevolent. They brought with them 200 leaders and sub-leaders with them. There were actually two Atlantis periods, which I don't know the whole story about that yet, because that hasn't been translated into English yet. I know some of the story. There were actually two Semyazas who came down. Now, Billy, and this is confusing, Billy's contact was Semyazi. He, beautiful woman, 300 years old, with reddish blonde hair, who was almost the king of wisdom. She was learning there, and she was Billy's contact in the 1975 time frame. Well, if you go back 133,000 years ago, there was a leader here, the highest leader of the sub-leaders, who was called Semyasa. And there were actually, this Semyasa mated with an earth woman who's called an Eva, a female being, mostly human-like and rather beautiful. And the descendant of this sex act was called Adam. And Adam is a word which in the Lyrian language, I guess the Lyrian, means earth human being. So there was a Semyasa that copulated with an earth woman who was, this is a rather long story, that produced an Adam. And there was actually two Atlantises with two Adams. That I'm not going to go into all of this, because I don't have all the information yet. Now, there was also genetic engineering, which took place at this time. Semyasa, who mated with Eve, was also a very advanced scientist. And they were violating their own rules here. They shouldn't have been doing all of this stuff. They created, through their genetic engineering, giants, giant humans up to 33 feet tall, some even a little taller. And this came from the mixing of the extraterrestrial human with the Earth human over several generations. So we here on the Earth are the offspring of these star travelers who mated with wild primitive human beings here on the Earth. And that's described in Contact Report 7 in lines 119, 120. I'll read these to you real quick. It says, "But they are all equally the product of the celestial suns. They were begotten of them, just like the still existing Earth races. The celestial suns, or the star travelers, as we call our ancestors, were native to various planets of stars in another space-time configuration far away from the solar system, where the planets were fundamentally different climatically. Consequently, they also produced other races that were able to adapt themselves to the climate from the very beginning." Now, in Contact Report 7, line 155, it says, "The extraterrestrials that came in the past were diverse in their size." Part of these extraterrestrials, we talked about genetic engineering, which produced giants, but part of these extraterrestrials themselves were giants. Some of them 39 feet tall, some of them as small as 2 feet tall, so to speak. So I think only the smallest ancestors of the Pleiadians were about 50 centimeters, while the largest and most vicious ones were 12 meters. So we're talking about 1 meter equal to, I don't know, I'd have to double check, maybe 3.28 feet. And the largest of these giants on the Earth at this time were like 39 feet tall, which is something we just can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. So this is strange, bizarre stuff was going on the Earth at the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. And eventually what happened here is there was a great war. There was an extraterrestrial came here whose name was Eris the Barbarian, and he started the Great War that took place between Atlantis and Lemuria. And it eventually almost destroyed the entire Earth. So let me step back a little bit. Our universe, according to my information, is called the Dern universe, and it's 46 trillion years old. It was created in something like a Big Bang. There's also a parallel universe to ours called the Tao universe. It's our sister universe. It's also 46 trillion years old, and the difference between the two universes is in the Tao universe, the stars are a lot closer together. Now, in our solar system, or in our galaxy, in our Milky Way galaxy, there's about 2.6 million advanced human civilizations. I think there's about 7.5 million solar systems that will report higher life. Originally, my understanding is there was something like 79 pure different human races. And the lifespans of human beings on other worlds extend to thousands of years. And the diversity of the size is incredible. There are people who are only 16 inches tall. There are people that are 40 feet tall. And the Milky Way is a barred spiral galaxy about 100,000 to 120,000 light years in diameter, just our galaxy. And there are between 2 to 400 billion stars in our galaxy. Now, our solar system is located within the disk of our galaxy, about two-thirds the way out from the galactic center, on the inner edge of a spiral-shaped configuration of gas, so to speak. So our galaxy may have as high as 400 billion stars. We just don't know. Now, the people who came here from Era, you know, we've always called them Pleiadians, but they're not from our Pleiades. This is part of the information that was handed down for hundreds of years, which is not correct. They're not from our Pleiades. They're from, and really nothing, no really human life can come from our Pleiades. They have the wrong kind of stars. They're bluish-white stars. To have life, you have to have these yellow stars, which produce the right kind of energy and radiation that enhances the life force. Remember me talking about earlier that the energy from the stars, the light actually penetrates into the earth and into underground plants and animals and into the deep layers of the oceans to add vitality to these living creatures. So there is a certain kind of star system that produces life. And these Pleiarians live in a different space-time configuration. So probably the people in ancient times just didn't understand what was being talked about. So the Era is the home world for Ptah, Quetzal, Semyase, Sphath. And there are other members of this federation of peoples. They have a different kind of economy system. It's non-monetary. There's robot-assisted manufacturing. They have a borrowed asset scheme. In other words, you would borrow a flying car if you needed such a thing. Poverty's been eradicated. Food, energy, and housing are free. Now, this is very going to probably piss off the women in the audience. But they have polygamy in their solar, in their system on their planet. They will allow a man to have as much as four different wives. And the reason they say that turns out fair is because of reincarnation. I don't know. I've never had it completely explained. But if you look, for example, I look at nature like a group of deer. You may have one buck who mates with three or four different female deer. That's what they've fashioned their whole thing off of. Mm-hmm. So that's why they have it, and I'm sure a lot of people would argue against that. But anyway, there are no homosexuals or bisexuals on Era because the Pleiarians say this is just a natural genetic disorder that can be eradicated through genetic manipulation. I know that would not go across very well today, but mm-hmm. this is what the information says. Also, in marriage, they never have incompatible couples because they use advanced astrology and other social sciences to figure out, are these people compatible? So it's a very different kind of society. They haven't had war for 20,000 years. Their planet is in a pristine environment. The air is very, very thick because they haven't poked any holes in their ozone. They don't have any pollution on the planet. They don't mine on the planet. They don't take oil. By the way, oil is very important to keep inside your planet because it suspends, and it's like there's lubrication in your joints. You know, it's the same kind of thing. The planet needs all these things. You know, you cannot take these things out of the planet and have nothing happen. The same reason they have gigantic forests all over their planet, because the forests moderate the weather. In other words, the gigantic forests create this shaded area in the summertime, so it keeps it cool. Now, in the winter, if you didn't have all the trees, the light would just reflect back with the trees, it pulls in a little more heat. Now, the other thing that the forests do is when the wind blows across the top of the forest, it creates a turbulence. And that turbulence forms clouds and brings rain. So you cannot chop down a forest or even a wooded area without affecting the environment in a negative way. We don't understand that on the earth yet. You see, everything in creation is all related. There's a oneness to it. And there are something called creational natural laws, and I know we're running out of time, but let me go over these quickly, over these creational natural laws. First of all is the law of love, which is refers to the highest form of love called effective love. It has nothing to do with romance. It's a kind of love that's based on respect and veneration. And Billy has this tremendous whole writing on love. And I'll quote a few things from this writing. It's called Love Letter 27. It says, "Love is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic." So nothing at all would exist if it were not for the love of creation. So this superintelligence, which, by the way, has no personality, which is, wow, that's mind-bending. It's not Heavenly Father. It radiates love. And everything in creation that exists is here for a logical reason. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And love, again, is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. So, and the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. So there's a super fantastic, majestic life energy, spiritual energy that exists in our universe. But what it's described of in the German as a Wesenheit. And that means that it's this neutral, positive entity. It doesn't function like a Heavenly Father. It's not going to save you from, if you jump off the cliff, you jump off the cliff. Now, an earthly father will grab the kid and stop him from running out in the traffic. But this superintelligence doesn't operate that way. If you run out in the traffic and you get run over, well, your spirit form will reincarnate. So the Meyer teaching says that we're responsible for everything that we do and for everything that we think. And this leads to the second creational natural law, which is the law of striving, which is the fundamental law of all evolution. Without striving, there is no life. And you cannot have happiness without striving. And this leads to a great passage in Billy's book called The Way to Live. On page 102, he says, "Striving creates the life right up to the being. Striving means delectation. Delectation means like pleasure, satisfaction, in a form which is always fulfilling and progressive. To be without striving means unwillingness and affliction." So if you don't work, you're going to have unwillingness and affliction. This is one of the laws of the universe. And I know we're running out of time here. I'll go quickly. Mm-hmm. So inhibited striving and inhibited life bring inhibited evolution and stagnation. So if the listener out there is going through a time where they're hopeless, where they have grief, where they have confusion, irrationality, joylessness, start striving. Even if it's something simple, like cleaning out your garage or something along that nature, start striving. It's one of the laws of nature. You cannot have happiness without striving. You cannot have life. Now, the other creational natural law is the law of harmony, which we talked about earlier, and that's learning to control your thoughts so that they're neutral, positive. See, the law of harmony says there's a bipolar structure to everything that exists. There's a negative and a positive. And you want to keep your thoughts neutral, positive. So you want to be confident. You want to be optimistic. You want to be relaxed. You want to be cheerful. And then you'll be in the law of harmony. But you're not going to be over cheerful or over confident, because that will lead to asartong as well. Now, if you follow these other three laws, then you'll be able to fulfill the law of prosperity and abundance. And this says every life form, and therefore also the human being, has everything in plentiful abundance in order to be able to live and evolve without having to live in want. Now, unfortunately, we have a lot of people living in want on the earth because we're not following the law of love, we're not following the law of striving, and we're not following the law of harmony. And there are other laws related to the population of a planet like the earth. And I know you can literally fit all the people on the earth into Texas, but for example, and I know we're running out of time, to feed those people, to feed them cattle, for example, it takes about one cow for 2 acres. So for 7 billion people on the earth, if you wanted to feed them, give them one cow, you would take 14 billion acres of space. Well, that would be all the area in United States, South America, Canada, and Russia, just to raise one cow for each human being on the earth. So this information is about how to live, how to run your planet. And this is just, yeah. So this, I just wanted to get this information. I know we're running out of time.
No, it's excellent information tonight, Mark, and we are just about out of time here. So I have to thank you so much for joining us. And once again, how can everybody listen to you and access your website?
Just Google Ohio Exopolitics, and there's a whole ton of places that are starting to cover the show now. Player FM, TuneIn.com. There's a couple people on YouTube that are putting some of my shows out there. Podbean is out there. And Revolution Radio and Studio A, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Blog Talk Radio at various times.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. Wonderful. Thank you to my incredible producer and station owner, Tina Rio, who makes this network happen. Tune in next week, when my special guest will be Salane Terry Apodaca. And stay tuned for The Grind, only at KCMR Digital Radio Network. All right, everybody, have a wonderful weekend. Thank you, Mark.
Stand by.
All right, in 3, 2, 1.
You've been listening to Hyperspace. 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 Hosted by Solaris Blue Raven, where the truth is beamed to you at the speed of light. Live every Friday night at 9 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on the KCOR Digital Radio Network. For more information on the host of Hyperspace, Solaris Blue Raven, please visit her website at nightshadowanomalydetectives.com. Hyperspace.
Hyperspace.
Once thought a theoretical dimensional anomaly, now a tangible cosmic waveform to the truth.
Truth.
Hyperspace.
This is KCOR Las Vegas, home of the Digital Radio Network, broadcasting from a shack just south of Area 51.
Wait, that doesn't exist.
This is the KCOR Digital Radio Network. Now for the news.